Welcome to the SOAP video series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We are working our way through the book of Romans, and we've come to
the end.
The very end.
Yeah, week 7. Nice. We've been here quite a while, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of a fly-through, though. I mean, Even though it was 7 weeks, a lot of information, incredible amount of information.
So much stuff, and so much stuff that obviously we either...
Yeah.
Skipped over completely or just glossed over.
I thought you were going to say ignored. Yeah, we didn't ignore anything. But there is so much here.
Yeah.
And as we talked about in the first week, it's almost like Paul decided, look, I know these guys are Christians, but I don't know where they're at in their spirituality and where they're in their understanding. I'll give them everything I know.
Yeah.
and he just lays it out.
It really is sort of like an entire seminary course. Yeah,
I think I called it his thesis paper.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
Right. I mean,
he knew they knew the gospel because they were believers.
Right.
Outside of that,
yeah, it was unknown.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So start at the beginning, and then say, "I'll get to you as soon as I can."
Yeah.
I'll come visit you, and we see that this week.
Well, and this is the guy who just a couple of years later would. Spent 3 years in Ephesus, basically, I mean, in the lecture hall of Tyrannus, Acts says, teaching for 3 years day and night. So it's not like he didn't have something to say.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing I really like about this is that you brought out, because every time you go through Scripture, you can pick up different things. And I think part of it is your life, where you're at in your life, things that have happened to you recently that you pick up on, because similar things happen, you know, in the Bible, and also where you're at from a maturity level, too. And so you see things in a different way. You brought up a number of times, I think every week, the steps of the path.
Yeah.
And, you know, that they just show up in here, and it's true.
Yeah.
And we see it again this week. And you would expect towards the end that we'd see brotherly affection and unselfish love, and Paul starts right out with it.
Yeah, so we're jumping in about halfway through chapter 14, and so we'll do about 2.5 chapters for this week and finish the book. And it's really just a continuation of where we were last week. Right. You know, 12, 13, and 14 really is the practical side of, we've got all this theology now.
Yeah,
what are we going to do with it? Right?
Right.
So, and that's really where the brotherly affection, unselfish love come in. And so he's been talking about specifically how we treat our fellow Christians, especially when we disagree.
Right. Right. And imagine this with love.
Right? Imagine this. Right? We disagree.
Yeah. Right. But he starts right out with, don't put an obstacle or a trap. And he's like, hey, you that are more mature, you know, listen to me.
Yeah.
Your job is not to smack somebody down because they don't understand something, but with love, with patience, not necessarily help them, but don't discourage them.
Yeah,
is really the big point that he has there.
And we did end last week with the note that we need to bring up again this week. We're not talking about doctrinal difference. We're not talking about good doctrine, healthy doctrine versus false doctrine.
Right.
That needs to be corrected. Still in love, but it needs to be corrected. We need to bring people along.
Right.
What we're really dealing with is matters of let's call them matters of conscience. They can be preferences, they can be whatever, but really matters of conscience, where I think something is sin and you don't.
Right.
Or you think something is sin and I don't, and the Bible doesn't say either way. And so it falls into this category where it really would be sin for me, but it wouldn't be sin for you.
Because, my conscience is clear with it.
Right. And sometimes that has to do with maturity, and sometimes it may not.
Right. Right. Food is always one that's brought up.
Yep.
From the standpoint of, if you think about it, you know, some of these people were Jews. They were brought up, you know, hey, here's a whole list of things you can never eat.
Yep.
And it's a sin. It's a sin to eat these. And now Paul's saying, eat away.
Anything you want. And on the other hand, you've got Gentiles who grew up in a pagan culture where this animal may have been offered as a sacrifice to a demon god.
Right.
And these Gentiles are like, I don't want to have any part of that anymore. And the Jews are like, but it's a clean animal.
Right. Right. So I guess you do have it both ways. And it's really working through it.
Yeah.
and where are you at, where do you need to be, and then coming back to the scriptures. What do the scriptures say?
So the big principle is, when it comes to matters of conscience, you already said don't put an obstacle or a trap in someone's way. So right. if I have a matter of conscience, let's use something stupid, okay? An ice cream cone, okay? I think it's wrong to have ice cream in the middle of winter because I absolutely hate winter and and okay. Well, you know, whatever. Yeah. Like I said, it's just something right. stupid yep. that yep. we're not going to offend anybody with, right?
Right?
And you know that, and you know that I really have a problem with this, and it would, and not just a preference, not just an oh I don't like it, but I really think that it's wrong to do this one thing.
Right.
And you know that.
Right.
So
do I buy that ice cream and I eat it in front of you?
That's the point.
Or is it okay? Just avoid it?
Yeah, is it okay for you to buy the ice cream and eat it? Absolutely, it's okay. But do you wander in front of me? You know, oh, this is so good. And it's like, here, have some. I can't have some. It's wrong for me to have some. No, it's okay. At that point, you're tearing me down.
Right.
Now, if I believe that it's wrong for me and it's not wrong for you and I understand that difference, feel free, have it in front of me. It doesn't matter.
Right.
But still, don't keep shoving it in my face.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, so it is, yeah, and that is exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah, it's just wisdom. It's just wisdom and caring for each other and building up and not tearing down.
Yeah, and I like the last part in chapter 14, verse 23. But the man who doubts is condemned if he eats, because he does not do so from faith.
Yeah.
And whatever is not from faith is sin.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing there. And again, they're talking about food here, but replace it with whatever you want to replace it with.
And that's why it really does come down to a matter of matters of conscience really could be sin. Right. It really would be. If I violate my conscience or you violate your conscience on a matter, you have actually sinned against yourself.
Right.
Even if you didn't sin against God.
Yeah.
You sin against yourself and
that's sin.
And it's sin.
Yeah. And that was I think that was a hard thing for me to grasp, right? Because I want sin to be yes or no, black or white, the same for everybody.
Yeah.
And it's not.
It's not.
And if you think something is wrong, and you do it, it's sin. It's sin for you.
Yep.
And I can do the exact same thing and it with a clear conscience, and it's not sin for me.
Yeah.
And now we're in this gray area.
Yep.
And we know, when we love our lives, 90% of it's the gray area.
Yeah.
And we try to make it the 10% part. But
yeah. Yeah. You point out verse 23. I really go back to 19 and 20 as part of the big principle. Let's pursue what makes for peace and for building up one another. And then he gets this, I can hear it in a tone in my head where he says, don't destroy the work of God for food. Right? There's almost, it's not snarky, yeah. It's not sarcastic, but there's this almost, this disbelief. Like, you would really destroy what God is doing in somebody's life over a hamburger? Over a cheeseburger, over an ice cream cone? Like, really, this is what you're going to die on? This is the hill you're going to die on?
Yeah.
And destroy somebody in the process?
Yeah. And the obvious thing today would be Lent.
Sure.
You know, so this just isn't, you know, old-time biblical thing. There's practical application here,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. When you're talking about food or giving something up.
From a food standpoint.
Yeah. But it can be... other stupid stuff, Bible versions. It could be, you know, dress code. It could be music. It could be, I mean, when I was growing up, there are still, I have certain friends who will not have certain forms of entertainment. You know, they're not going to go to the movie theater. They're not, you know, it can be all sorts of things that, frankly, Paul says repeatedly. He says it in Romans. He says it in 1 Corinthians. Everything is lawful. I mean, there's very little that God has said thou shalt not do.
Right. But it may or may not be profitable, but
yeah.
The lawful part is what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, is it beneficial? Is it helpful? And then, of course, does it help the other person? That's really where, and that's what really sums up brotherly affection, right?
Yeah. Does it help the
other the other person, or does it tear them down? Build up or tear down?
Yeah. So Paul continues in chapter 15. He's talking about building up the weak.
Yep.
And he uses Christ as the example. And he says, didn't Christ show us this? He didn't come for his pleasure, which is, but he came to work. And so, so we, even as mature Christians, still need to put in the work and still need to do things.
Yeah.
I do like he quotes a number of Old Testament scriptures in this section that brings out Gentiles.
Yeah.
I missed it.
Yeah.
You know, reading the Old Testament, you know, I always think that if Gentiles are even in there, it's, you know, they're poo-poo or, you know, don't associate with them at all. But there's some strong verses in there talking about great things about Gentiles and rejoicing for them.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, who knew?
Well, so part of it, this is a good tip for anybody who's reading through the Old Testament, you're rarely... depending on your translation, most translations aren't going to use the word Gentile in the Old Testament. So he's using it here. What you're going to find is nations, typically, or peoples. Yep. Peoples or nations. And so you're reading the Old Testament. It doesn't say anything about Gentiles. Well, it does. It's just not going to use that term.
Okay.
So if you were to look up these exact same verses in the Old Testament, it's probably not going to say Gentiles, which makes it, you know, harder for us to... you know, easy to overlook, I guess, is what I'm saying. So,
yeah. So also in 15, Paul talks about why he's writing this letter, which is really a difference. In most of the time, you know, in chapter 1, Paul's talking about why he's writing this, who he's writing this to.
Yep.
But this is at the end.
Well, and he does, and it sort of bookends what he's trying to do.
Okay.
Yeah. It's similar to chapter 1. But it's not exactly the same. By the time he's done with all of his theology, he's like, so you're really getting this, right? This is why I'm writing to you.
Yeah. So he talks, you know, he wants to proclaim the gospel. He wants to boldly discuss Christ.
Yep.
And in verse 20, he says, and in this way, I desire to preach where Christ has not been named, so as not to build on another person's foundation.
Yeah.
Which... it's cool. I kind of agree with him. But also in other places, he had talked about, you know, it's fine to build on other people's things. You know, Apollos waters and I, you know, do this part.
Yep.
You know, where everybody has a piece and a part,
too.
So is one way better than the other?
No, not really. I don't think so. His particular ministry was go out to the Gentiles and preach the gospel. So it wasn't so much, I'm going to start a church and stay here. Or I'm going to, you know, come in and Peter was over here and John was over here. So I'm going to swoop in and say, you know, let me tell you what they didn't, you know, that type of thing. In verse 22, he says, this is the reason I was often hindered from coming to you, but now there's no more to keep me in these regions. And I have for many years desired to come to you when I go to Spain. So... He's actually sitting in Corinth right now when he's writing this letter. He's thinking back through his ministry. He's like, I've covered everything basically from Jerusalem to Greece now. Greece and Macedonia.
Corinth.
Yeah, Corinth.
Right, so he's, you know,
on that side of the Mediterranean. Come through Turkey and everything. What's next? Well, in the known world, in the Roman Empire, he could have gone the southern route and hit North Africa.
Right.
But... there's still Rome.
Rome.
And Italy, and then you're off to France and Spain. And Spain, he mentions Spain specifically, that's the edge of the known world.
Right.
It's the edge of the Roman Empire. He literally wanted to cover the bulk of the Roman Empire in his lifetime.
Yeah, how cool. That's way cool.
And so his thing is, I know you've heard the gospel, that's why I didn't come rushing to Rome, which I should have done if that were, you know. Yeah. You've already got the gospel, so I've taken my time, I'm working my way to you.
Yeah.
You're next.
Really, I'm looking forward. Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking forward.
Yeah. I'm going to use you as a stopping point. I'm expecting you to, you know, load me up and send me on my way. It's funny that he says that as a missionary. I'm expecting you to load up my satchels, give me the money and stuff that I need to send me on my way.
Yeah, that is nice. So, did he ever make it to Spain?
Bum, bum, bum. We don't know.
Yeah.
There's no way to know. The book of Acts ends with, from here, he's going to go to Jerusalem. He's going to be arrested,
Yeah, and we've talked about that before, right? Yeah. He ends up in Rome.
He eventually makes it to Rome.
He's arrested.
Yeah, Acts 28 tells us he's there for two full years in a rented house, which means that Acts 28 wasn't concluded until he was done for two full years.
Yeah.
And that's all we know.
Right.
So somewhere over the next 4 to 6 years, he's doing some kind of ministry. He gets arrested, comes back to Rome, and is killed then in Rome in somewhere between 66 and 68, depending on who you ask. He was let out around 62, so that's where that 4 to 6 years comes in. I don't know. Did he make it to Spain? Did he make it to France? Did he ever get back to Jerusalem? Did he make one more tour around all?
Yeah.
We have no... Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. So then we get into chapter 16, and like you said, Paul's never been to Rome, yet he lists 25 names.
I know it.
And
he knows
most he calls
them.
My great friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
my co-worker, whoever. And some of these names we know.
Yeah. Well, and the church that's in their house and the church and what you're doing here, what you're doing. Like,
right. So when you said something about starting a ministry, yeah, it's already, Rome's already going.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's, you know, he's just helping them out.
Yep.
So any idea how all these people got to Rome? Or why they're in Rome?
A lot of Greek or Latin names, not as many Jewish names or Hebrew names. So they may have been people who were saved there. We know Priscilla and Aquila had come from Rome and had met with Paul and administered, and so it's possible that they were back and that they were part of the ministry, or really getting the ministry going there.
She was a purple cloth lady, right?
No, that was Lydia.
Oh, Lydia.
Right. They actually they met up with Paul in Corinth and helped Apollos. Actually, they taught Apollos. Interesting, down in verse 13, greet Rufus, chosen in the Lord, and his mother, who was also a mother to me. So he knows her from somewhere back.
Right.
Could be, I mean, that most scholars think Rufus is named as one of the sons of Simon of Cyrene, who carried Jesus' cross.
Oh, maybe, right?
And so if it's the same Rufus, then it makes sense that there's a Jerusalem connection. And when Saul of Tarsus was growing up in Jerusalem while he was ministering there, maybe there's a connection there. Right. Wow. So, yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And then he mentions, starting in verse 21, now he's mentioning people who are not in Rome, but part of his team. And verse 23, Gaius and Erastus and Quartus, these are believers in Corinth that are giving their greetings to the believers in Rome.
Yeah, how cool is that? And then we also have who actually wrote it.
Right? Yep, Tertius, who am writing this letter.
Yeah, I of course read it as Tetris.
Tetris. Yeah, it's just really cool. When I think of Paul and the ministry organization that he ran.
Yep.
You know, he's got people, you know, Luke and Timothy and Titus and Silas. And
giving them jobs, keeping track of them. Some people are falling off, other people are being added.
Yep.
How do you keep track of them?
Without the technology and the internet and everything that we have today.
Yeah, did he keep a little scorecard?
Have
a little index?
Early spreadsheet, you know.
Right, probably not.
He knew where everybody was, what they were doing. And we read in some of his letters where, you know, he waited sometimes for months to hear the news that he had requested.
Right.
People were traveling.
It takes forever.
Okay. Right? And then he was updating his spreadsheet and sending them off to do different things.
Yeah. I do think that's a good reason why, especially in this letter, as other letters, you list as many people as you can. So that other people know, oh yeah, okay, they're still here, they're still around.
Yep.
Not only that, the acknowledgement, getting, you know, to receive a letter that Paul acknowledges you in.
Yep.
I mean, what a kick in your ministry! You'd be so excited.
And knowing who you can trust.
Yeah, yeah. So now these are all these people are.
Yeah. If Paul vouches for you, then I know that I can trust really you point. And I can trust your doctrine.
Right. Yeah. Right. Good. Good. So we by no means covered everything, but we're done. We covered everything.
Well, there's one more thing I think that you...
the benediction?
Yeah, you yeah. It's a really cool... Yeah. We've already seen one benediction at the end of chapter 11, so now he gives another one.
Well, it's a long one, right?
Yeah.
Maybe there's another page on the scroll, another scroll.
Now to him who is able to strengthen you, according to my gospel, and the proclamation of Jesus Christ... according to the revelation of the mystery that had been kept secret for long ages, and this is stuff that he actually gets into in Ephesians, but now is disclosed, and through the prophetic scriptures has been made known to all the nations, according to the command of the eternal God, which is just a great line, to bring about the obedience of faith to the only wise God through Jesus Christ, be glory forever. Amen.
Yeah. You wonder how long that took, if he just ripped it off, yeah. or if he agonized over that for a while. A couple revisions.
Word
a couple,
for word.
No, don't write yet. Don't write yet.
Dictating. No, scratch that. Let me try a different one. Yeah. But that's good. That's really good. Some great turns of phrase there. So, we're not going to greet you with a holy kiss, but we greet you and hope that you've enjoyed our time in Romans. And obviously a lot more that we could discuss and a lot more to study. We've done Romans at the church. We've taught Romans at the church a couple of times. Maybe if you're interested, you can find it on our website, oaktreechurch.com/messages. You can see if you can find some Romans teachings on there, I believe. Other than that, you can always contact us with questions, and we're happy to tackle your questions and help you study more and more. So,
yeah.
We'll be back with a new series, but until then, hope your studies are going well, and see you next time.
Yeah, keep moving forward.